Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, designing custom decks for outdoor relaxation and entertaining. Details at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Sunday marked 100 days since May 16th, the day an EF3 tornado ripped through St. Louis. Today, we're discussing what the last 100 days have looked like. First, we're speaking with two of my STL PR colleagues who've been following the many through lines that the May 16th tornado has woven through the city. Kayvon Mansouri is STL PR's new economic development reporter. Kayvon, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And Hiba Ahmed is STL PR's education reporter. Welcome back to you as well, Hiba.
Hi, Elaine.
So on May 17th, that was one day after the tornado, Mayor Kara Spencer tweeted a plea to city residents after sharing details on how to seek resources through the city's website. The tweet read, "Please do not self-deploy. A coordinated volunteer effort helps us make sure our first responders can do their jobs as effectively as possible." This was also expressed by Spencer at one of her press briefings that took place outside Aldi at Kings Highway and Del Mar. Now, I'm not sure how each of you feel, if you feel the same way. It feels like it was a lot farther away than 100 days ago, and it doesn't seem like many residents in the region followed that particular directive 100 days ago. Mm-hmm. What do you know about the volunteer efforts over the last 100 days, Hiba?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's been the city's volunteers and the city residents, particularly in North City, but I mean, really from all across the city and the region who came together to help their neighbors. You know, we are very familiar with the People's Response, which is a coordination of two local nonprofits that came together, led by Kayla Reed and Ohan Ashe. And, you know, they deployed right into the communities, and you know, it's, they were door knocking, distributing supplies, checking in with folks. I mean, that was immediately after the storm.
Right. Kayvon, I noted that you are the new economic development reporter, and previous to this, you were an investigative reporter with the Midwest Newsroom. So we've talked with you a lot about really big developing stories, things that you've worked on, you've worked with folks here at the station. You're also a St. Louis native. So what is it that you were noticing about volunteer efforts specifically from the time of May 16th and particularly in the few weeks after?
You know, I mean, everyone who's from St. Louis knows that, you know, there's that St. Louis is a very it's a strong place to live. And the thing that I noticed, that the volunteer effort felt in some ways almost bigger than anything that was going on in the city. You know, there was not a day went by where I didn't see something on social media or see for myself, you know, these huge efforts, these massive efforts out to try to get people on their feet. And really just that has to happen in these sort of situations. It's a shame, but there's, you know, without your neighbors, it's really hard to kind of get back up on your feet. And this is a situation that called for, you know, not only neighbors, but also everyone else to show up, the city, the, you know, the state, the federal government. Now, if that has happened, you know, I think we're still figuring that out. But I think one thing you can say looking back is that the neighbors, the volunteers stepped up and they showed up for those neighborhoods that were affected.
And speaking of neighbors and volunteers, Hiba, you were out there that weekend because the tornado hit on a Friday afternoon. What was it that you heard from residents and volunteers about their thoughts regarding the city's response to the tornado?
Yeah, I mean, in those early days, it was just kind of like where I think people were just asking for just the basic things, right? We need food, water, shelter, supplies. And there was some criticism from residents that, you know, the headquarters where, you know, kind of the central operation of the police and the fire department and the mayor's office was a little bit further away from like the real center of the storm. And, you know, I think what we were seeing from folks was that they just were looking for immediate support and responses. I mean, they were like, let's launch into debris cleanup. Let's figure this out. We need dumpsters. We need people. We need trucks. And, you know, some of that stuff we're still waiting on.
Yeah. The tornado also hit at a very particular time. Mm-hmm. It was 1 week before summer vacation mm-hmm. for St. Louis public schools. And as the education reporter, that's obviously something that you pay attention to. And we are now in the second week of the fall semester. Can you give us a brief rundown, Hiba, of how SLPS is doing and whether we have a clearer picture of how many students and families in the district were impacted by the storm?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, since the storm, 12 buildings were damaged across St. Louis Public Schools. Of those buildings, six of the schools have not been able to reopen in time for the start of the school year, and those students have been relocated to other schools within the district. And that's roughly, you know, the enrollment around those schools was about 2,000. And I should say, these are all schools in North City. Mm-hmm. Since then, you know, the district says that they have done outreach to families that were living in the path of the tornado through guidance counselors, social workers, you know, school principals. And what they learned over the summer is that anywhere from 1,500 to 2,000 students are still not accounted for. Now, it's still unclear. Those students could still be enrolled in schools within the district, but maybe are not reporting to those traditional neighborhood schools they were attending last school year. They may have gone to the charter schools. They may still be at home, or they might be doing online or virtual learning. There's a lot of different options right now, but you know, that attendance has definitely dipped across those storm-damaged schools. I think the statistic I have is about 27%, and that's compared to the number of students who said, hey, we will be back in the fall prior to the tornado. Mm-hmm. So I should say, though, attendance, enrollment, it fluctuates at the start of the school year. District officials say that they are likely to see that number grow, especially after the Labor Day weekend.
What was it like, though, to observe the first day of school just last week?
Yeah. So we were at Sumner High, where Sumner High School has been located to Stevens Middle School. And that was, you know, a big celebration. You know, the Sumner High School Alumni Association welcomes back students every single year. But what I will say is that we were there for, you know, about an hour. And I want to say in front of me, at least 100 students showed up. And that school had about an enrollment of around 400 students last year, right? So again, low attendance numbers, it's concerning, but maybe that number will likely grow, and it did over the first week of school. Mm-hmm. In contrast, though, we went over to Ashland Elementary School, and that school is located in the Penrose neighborhood. And Ashland was kind of serving as like a big bus stop for students, right? Because that school traditionally had about 60% of the students walk to school, so they were neighborhood residents. And those kids were supposed to walk to that school and then get picked up and dropped off at their relocated school at Jefferson Elementary. Yeah, when I was out there with our colleagues, there were no Ashland students. And in that neighborhood, Penrose, I mean, Kayvon, you've been over there. It's still really, really badly damaged.
Yeah. What did you see over there, Kayvon?
I mean, yeah, it's, you know, this is one of the areas that have some of the worst damage, you know. So not only are these houses kind of like, you know, people are trying to bounce back, the repairs are being made in some places they're not, you know. So it's kind of hard to imagine how parents can deal with, you know, getting their kids to school while they're dealing with all this kind of unprecedented damage to their house, if they're even in that house anymore.
Right.
Hib and I have talked about a lot is, you know, the idea that a lot of these students aren't probably at their home anymore, and they're probably now dealing with a system that they're not used to about how they actually get enrolled in a school they might be in or the school they should be in. And that kind of gets into another, we've talked about McKinney-Vento issues on this show before, and that gets into a whole different sort of can of worms.
And again, the McKinney-Vento Act, it pertains to students who are unhoused or homeless or experiencing unstable housing,
which in this situation many would fall under. So if you're listening and you think your student or your child might be dealing with homelessness, that's a broad spectrum, so you should definitely look into that.
You're entitled to transportation to your school that you attended in the fall or to the school that you're choosing to send your student to in the temporary location where you're located.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. While you were out there by Ashland, Kayvon, did you notice that there were any repairs happening? Was there anything, any work being done on the school?
Oh, I couldn't say. I didn't notice on the school. The area in general, though, like, it's kind of a mixed bag, you know, mm-hmm. as you can see in the story that we were telling. You know, there's it just depends. It's really a mixed bag, especially if you get further north, like the repairs that are being made to these neighborhoods really fall off. Mm-hmm. And it's because, you know, I've heard from a lot of different people. I talked to contractors that were up there. But it's a mixture of, can people afford it? Were they insured? And also just the fact that, like, contractors are really, not only are they really busy, but a lot of the contractors I talked to says a lot of contractors won't do work up in that area. Mm. And that sort of, again, is a whole other thing where, like, you know, is this area going to get the work and repairs that it needs? Mm-hmm. And there's this huge sort of overlapping issues that make that difficult.
Yeah. And we are going to come back to that. What I'm wondering about, as far as the schools go, though, before we move away from that, Hiba, are you aware of any repairs that are happening with storm-damaged schools? You've mentioned Ashland and also Sumner, which we've talked about.
Right.
Yeah.
No, so right now, I was told on Friday by school administrators that FEMA, so the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and the state equivalent of that has come by and done their surveys of the storm-damaged buildings, and then they're going to tell them, you know, this is the rough estimate of how much this is going to cost. These are the damages that can be covered by their assistance. And then the district has to decide whether or not it's going to make those repairs. And there's a whole process that goes into that. They put out a proposal, contractors would get hired, and then the work would begin. So the answer is no. No work has started on those school buildings beyond just like the basic stabilization that happened in the immediate aftermath of the storm.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Hiba Ahmed, who is STLPR's education reporter, and Kayvon Mansouri, who is the economic development reporter for St. Louis Public Radio. We're discussing these 100 days since the May 16th tornado. Now, in the last couple of weeks, there have been some hard numbers, some information that has come out, and St. Louis Public Radio has been chasing down some of those numbers and info about how the city, its leaders, and its residents responded to the tornado on May 16th, and in particular in the days that sort of immediately followed, the first few weeks in particular. Now, last week, the city of St. Louis issued an 80-page independent report prepared by the Carmody MacDonald law firm, and it recounts what was behind the tornado sirens not sounding on May 16th. Kayvon, what is it that stuck out to you in that report?
Yeah, as I read through the report, they kind of describe it as sort of a cascading issues, problems with the siren system itself, the CEMA, the City Emergency Management Agency staff, who were all at training and no one was there to push the button basically to get these sirens going. I think I described it to one of my colleagues earlier as like a sort of a caldera of problems. Mm-hmm. You know, we have this system that was installed in 1999, a very old system that was identified in 2024 as a problem by the comptroller Green that needed to be replaced. It wasn't replaced by the former administration because they were waiting for a better system to be put into, say, they wanted to have a system to put into place to replace the former system. And then you have this day where there's, you know, the staff is at a training, there's no one to press the button. And it was sort of like this sort of pressure cooker of problems that just really exploded the day of the tornado. And just, you know, it's one of those things where like all these sort of underlying issues exploded into this very big failure at several different levels, you know. And there's been a lot of finger pointing. I think, you know, anybody who's followed this has been pointing the finger quite a bit, but there were problems throughout, you know, not only systematic issues, issues of dated technology, but also staffing issues. One of the main things that they say is that the CEMA needs to be more staffed in the future. So, It was the perfect storm of problems that had been unresolved coming to a sort of giant explosion.
Yeah. Is there briefly something that gets your, you know, former investigative reporter and now economic development reporter sort of spidey senses going about what you have questions about?
I really would like to know, like, you know, how many systems throughout St. Louis City have been in place since 1999? I was born in 92.
I was just about to ask.
I'm starting to, well, I mean, I'm probably offend some people who say this. My knees are starting to creak a little bit. But a system installed in 99, I mean, you know.
How good could it possibly be?
You know, and how many more throughout our city, you know, it's an interesting thing. In my old job, you know, I remember covering a cyber attack that was because there were old systems in place. So my question is, I guess, is how many systems like that in St. Louis have been sort of like been waiting for the perfect replacement since 1999?
Mm-hmm. So now, Heba, you have some insight into another report that was issued, and that actually came out the week before the one from the city. And the nonprofit organization, Action St. Louis and For the Culture STL, which is a grassroots group dedicated to supporting Black St. Louisans, they released the People's Response Impact Report. Mm-hmm. The data in that report was collected by folks who are volunteering. Yeah. This is something that you mentioned earlier. What struck you in that report, Hiba?
Yeah, I mean, I think what it's just the level of serving that was done. They collected over 10,000 intake forms, and of that, they were able to, you know, ask questions about like how many people live in your house, how many kids do you have in your house, how many people have disabilities, and they touched on basically all of the neighborhoods that were in the path of the tornado. Some of the numbers that kind of stood out to me, again, like I focus a lot on kids, right? Because mm-hmm. as an education reporter, is that let's see, of the, you know, people that responded, right, there were over 3,000 people answered saying that they had school-age children at home. And of that, there were 1,600 that were under the age of 5. So this is it gives us a little bit of a better picture of, you know, what types of people were impacted by the storm. You know, there's this North St. Louis has seen a lot of population decline over the decades. It's an ongoing problem across the city, but particularly in the north side of the city. And part of that is because there is a dip in child birth rates, right? And that's not unique to St. Louis. It's happening in the nation and across the world. But you really start to see it come through. But that doesn't mean that there aren't children there, mm-hmm. right? So yeah, those are the kind of the two big numbers that kind of jumped out at me from mm-hmm. that report.
And there were a considerable number of people who were older, yeah, as well, from absolutely. What I remember in that report.
Disabled, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's, yeah.
Now, Kayvon, you have been using the time that you've been with St. Louis Public Radio to actually get out and see what is what's the lay of the land right now. Mm-hmm. You've talked with people. And in the last couple of weeks in particular, you've gone in and talked with people who have had some things to share with you. What is it that you have heard from folks?
You know, it varies, of course, where, you know, from where I was. I started in Clayton, and I talked with a bunch of neighbors there, and they're like, wow, the cleanup's been so great. You know, I walked around, I think I did very many laps in Clayton and in Richmond Heights to sort of like identify, you know, find some debris that, you know, left over. Homes obviously damaged and still under repair. But over there, the feeling's good. The repairs are underway. You know, it's a more affluent part of town, especially in Clayton, you know, but things are looking up there. And then you get to Forest Park and DeBolivar, and you start seeing these houses are, you know, there are less people here. There's more repairs being made. And then finally, you know, you make your way up to North City, and it's a very, very different situation. Mm-hmm. There are repairs being made, don't get me wrong, but there are many houses that are collapsed in on themselves, and there is no one working there. I talked with a lot of neighbors, a lot of contractors up there as well, who are part of the neighborhood, about what was going on. Joe Wood was one of the first I ran into. I think that was over on Core Avenue, or around, no, Deer Street, I'm sorry. He was working on a building that had it was one of the lighter damaged buildings. The part of the roof was damaged and water had been coming in for weeks. But what he told me was really stood out to me. I mean, I talked to a lot of people, and he just said, you know, kind of was talking about how the cleanup's been slow, and he kind of called out that that's because of the neighborhood we were in. So mm-hmm. here's what he had to say.
We're in a lower class area where the income is not really that high. So these are the people that's, you know, let's be honest, that's kind of forgotten about, and things kind of get swept up under the rug here just because people here don't have much money. That's what it is. Basically, it's the thing of the income level.
And that was Joe Wood, a contractor whom you met, Kayvon, while you walked the tornado's path over the last couple of weeks. And earlier, you talked about there not being contractors like wanting to go to certain areas. That is a certain indication of willingness to work, to get involved, to help. But what is what Joe has said that is about being worried? People will be forgotten. Is that a sentiment that you heard from others in the course of your reporting?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I walked the streets of North City for, I try to spend most of my time up there because I felt that it was the neighborhood I identified as, the area that I identified as the most sort of like, really just like, it seemed like 100 days on, it felt, I was surprised at like sort of where things stood. I mean, I know St. Louis, I was born and raised here, I know the area, but there's still debris in the street. We walked up north to Newstead, and there's a tree on a house. I don't know, it might be still going today. There was just water flying out of the basement, pooling all over the place. And a guy across the street told me that, you know, they've been going for about 2 weeks. And the thing is, he's, you know, that there was worry. And each person I talk to, they say, you know, when is this going to end? You know, one thing that Joe said to me is like, you know, people are depressed. They come out of their house every day. There's still debris on the street. Their houses just collapsed on themselves. Places people used to live. That house up on Newstead I was talking about that has a tree on it with water. If you look at Google Maps, it was a perfect house before that happened. And now there's a tree on it. So the people I talked to are really concerned. I mean, what is the future of these North City neighborhoods if 100 days on, there are still trees on buildings and some of these houses are totally collapsed? And I know that's a difficult question because a lot of these are private properties. Sometimes this, you know, who, it's hard to say what the city can and can't do, what people can and can't do, who owns these buildings. A lot of people, I talked to a couple that didn't make it into our feature story, but they're in our digital piece. They were leaving what they described as a slumlord's property, which basically they had just boarded up the doors and kind of kicked them out. And, you know, I talked, many of the contractors said, you know, a lot of these buildings aren't even owned by people who live in St. Louis.
Yeah.
There's a huge question about the future of these neighborhoods and who will step up to reinvest in this historically disinvested area. That we know that this is already a place that's down, that's been downtrodden, and you know, someone's got to step up and say, hey, we're not just going to leave this place behind.
Mm-hmm. Hey, but you also have been out, and one of the places you've gone is Enright Avenue, which is in the Academy neighborhood on the west side of the city. Mm-hmm. And you met a handful of neighbors, including a gentleman named Larry, right?
Yes, yeah, Larry Powell. I met him along with a crew of, you know, neighbors, volunteers who have kind of come together. They gather on Enright, and they've been working to, you know, fix up the neighborhood, rebuild people's homes so that people can come back. Like that's something I do really want to emphasize. Like throughout the summer, as we've been going to kind of these community meetings and meeting with folks, I mean, there is a real desire for folks to want to stay and rebuild, but it's a matter of whether or not they can. But getting back to Larry, yeah, I'd love to play this clip from him.
I was in my computer room and I happened to get up and walk back to the bedroom. And 2 or 3 seconds, I heard a loud boom, and I looked up front, and there was a softball-sized hole in the window. And I immediately heard debris hitting the building, and being an old Kansas boy, I recognized it was a tornado. So I jumped into the bathroom across the hall, put in 3 walls between me and the tornado. And as soon as I got in the bathroom, the other 3 windows exploded, sending glass all the way to the rear. And I was fortunate to get in there, otherwise I'd have been shredded cheese. And it blew out my rear wall. It was, traumatic experience because it lasted, I am saying, no more than 10 seconds. I came downstairs, you know, my neighbors' houses were destroyed. The huge, beautiful trees we had were all blown over, pulling up the sidewalk. And I immediately began to call neighbors.
And that was Larry Powell, an Academy neighborhood resident, recounting where he was during the May 16th tornado. I mean, you can hear the emotion in his voice. You know, he said he's a tornado or a Kansas boy, but clearly this event has had a huge impact on him personally.
He's a Marine vet, you know, he's a tough guy. He's seen some things and, you know, he lived through this tornado, much like so many residents who were in the path of the tornado. And he's trying to rebuild. He's trying to figure out what the next steps are.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything that stood out to you about the way he told you his story? Not necessarily just what he was saying.
I think it was, I met him, you know, under this white tent on Enright Avenue and along with some neighbors who live in the Academy, who live in the Central West End, who kind of come together to rebuild, as I said. And it's interesting because Larry says that, you know, he is a guy who likes to take a morning stroll. And then after the tornado, you know, that's what he did. He took a walk around the neighborhood and that's how he met, you know, some of these folks that he's now been gathering with since. And, you know, it's somebody who, like, I think many people who are probably listening to him and listening to us talk about this storm is that it's such a big and traumatic event, like he said, but it's showing up still every single day in people's lives. You know, it was, like you said, it happened really, really fast. It hit like 2:30 in the afternoon and then it was gone and it was blue skies, like the matter 15 minutes later, but it's still with people.
Yeah. So in the last minute or so, each of you, what do you think is the biggest thing that is left to be done? What is it that you will be following, Hiba?
For me, it's how this storm and the displacement of people plays into the larger story of this city, which is, you know, we keep talking about population decline. You've talked about it on the show here as well. But, you know, does this mean that people leave? And leave for good, or do they stay and rebuild? Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious to see how that shakes out.
Yeah. Kayvon, as a St. Louis native and as a journalist, why is this an important story to keep following?
For me, it's the neighborhoods, it's the housing, it's the people. You know, this is a core part of our neighborhood. I think a core part that a lot of people forget about, and I think that it's easy to forget about right now with this, with the, you know, the tornado's 100 days gone. But it's going to be very difficult process to get these. I mean, these houses that were destroyed are they will not be rebuilt the same in most cases. Mm. They will be a different neighborhood, a different community. And I think, you know, our job as journalists is to highlight where that community is headed, what happens there, and to bear witness. And I will be keeping as close an eye on what happens to these neighborhoods. And I hope that if anyone out there would like to talk about it, to give me a call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kayvon Mansouri is STLPR's new economic development reporter, and Hiba Ahmed is STLPR's education reporter. Hiba and Kayvon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
St. Louis Mayor Kara Spencer will be a guest on the show on Friday. If you have questions or comments for her about what the city has or has not done in these last 100 days in response to the tornado, let us know. You can email us at talk@stlpr.org. You can also send us a voice message. That's talk@stlpr.org. Up next, two St. Louis residents whose homes were damaged by the tornado and have built a friendship as they work to repair their houses. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.